In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate. Citizens, during these very difficult circumstances that Egypt, that the country is going through, President Hosni Mubarak has decided to step down as a President of the Republic and has entrusted the High Council of the Armed Forces to carry out the dealing of the country.
Well, we're just hearing reports that hundreds from Reuters news agency, hundreds of thousands of Egyptian protesters waving flags, crying, cheering and embracing in Cairo's Tahrir Square on Friday, shouting God is great when the resignation was announced. We can go now to our correspondent Paul Adams, who's in Alexandria. Paul, what's been the reaction there?
Well, I can tell you it's a scene of absolute euphoria. I'm on the steps outside the library on the waterfront in Alexandria, and I was just doing some interviews with some young people here, and suddenly they all seemed to be on their mobile phones, and they all started running around saying, he's gone, it's finally over. And within minutes of that, the street here on Corniche, on the waterfront, filled with traffic. It's as if the Egyptian football team has won the World Cup. There are cars going up and down. You can probably hear them with their sirens blaring. Lots of people waving Egyptian flags, and a sense of belief that finally, after 3 weeks and an extraordinary emotional rollercoaster. After all, it was only 24 hours ago in Tahrir Square that the people there felt that they have on the verge of victory. Now people are looking at themselves and saying, "We've finally done it."
So if you didn't know the Arabic for he's gone, presumably you're a bit more familiar with that now.
I'm sorry, I missed the question.
I was just saying, if you didn't know the Arabic for he's gone, you're now more familiar with that.
There are lots of different ways of putting it, and I'm hearing them all at the moment. Some of them, I suspect, are probably unrepeatable, but others are just genuinely gestures of celebration. I just heard the tail end of your conversation with Jonathan there about the many, many questions, which, of course, now remain to be answered in the coming weeks. But I think at the moment, at least as far as the young people here on the court in Alexandria are concerned, none of those questions seem to matter. As far as they're concerned, Hosni Mubarak is gone. They are mostly happy with the notion that the army will be running the show for the time being. They do not appear, on this reflection, to believe that the Mubarak regime, the surrounding him, the leadership surrounding him, is in this place. Because this has never just been about Hosni Mubarak. It has also been about those around him and the whole power structure surrounding the Mubarak regime. They believe that all of that is gone. Now, it may turn out that they are deluded. Now, there are a couple of gunshots there as someone has his pistol into the air just a little way down the pavement here, again in celebration. They may prove to be misguided, but at the moment, here tonight, they feel that this is it.
Paul Adams in Alexandria, thanks very much. The line's getting just a little bit broken up, but hopefully we'll come back to you later with a better line. In the meantime, the BBC Arabic service, Inez Ismail, is here with me in the studio, and amazing pictures we're seeing on the screen here.
Amazing pictures, really. The sense of jubilation and the how the crowd has received this, it's just it's an ending to this roller coaster of emotions, as we've been hearing, actually. But as Jonathan said, the questions are much more now. There are many more questions now. Will the parliament be resolved? Will there be a new constitution? What exactly will be the role of the army in this? Will the army only supervise a transition to a civilian government, or will the army want to have a bigger role in this? And in fact, the army is in a very sensitive situation. Some leaked reports, actually, from the U.S. cables show that Tantawi, the defense minister, is very, very keen on national security. This comes as number one to him, and that there are some voices in the army who are opposing to his policies of trying to ensure this. And this is a sign of the conflict that might be now going on inside the army, and that might cast some shadows also in the next phase, whether the army will take this country to a civilian government, or whether the army would want to have a bigger role in order, in their opinion, to secure the national unity and national security.
The BBC Arabic service, Ines Ismail, here with me in the studio throughout this special world briefing. And just a reminder, it was within the last 20 minutes that the Egyptian Vice President Omar Suleiman read out the following words: "In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate, citizens, in these difficult circumstances which the country is going through, President Hosni Mubarak has decided to step down from the post of President of the Republic and task the high command of the armed forces with running the country's affairs." Well, we can go now to get some international reaction to Washington, to our State Department correspondent, Kim Katas. Kim, Did you see this yourself? Did you manage to catch this?
Yes, I'm at the State Department, where rather amazingly we have a feed of all international television stations streaming into our little offices where the media sits on the second floor of the State Department. And I've been watching it, of course, on the BBC, also monitoring Arabic TV stations. And I was, in fact, listening to Mr. Suleiman as he came on television and in Arabic in this very stern voice, announcing that President Mubarak had resigned and that he was handing over the reins of the country to the higher council of the military. This certainly was a very clear statement, because what we heard from President Mubarak yesterday left everybody very confused. And President Obama came out with a statement last night saying the Egyptian leadership had to clarify what it was doing. This had to be a credible transition, and it wasn't clear to the people of Egypt what was going on. So certainly this has made it very clear, but it still, as we've been hearing from our other colleagues, raises a lot of other questions. Does this now mean that Egypt is in the hands of the military? Will this be a credible transition? What happens to the leadership of Mr. Suleiman? I've been trying to get some reaction from American officials. They're still trying to decipher again what this means, the same way as they were trying to decipher what President Mubarak's statement meant yesterday. They feel that this is all leading, going into the right direction, that there is reason to feel that this is positive. But it is still possible that both the army and Mr. Suleiman will now try to consolidate whatever is left of the regime. If they feel that the departure of Mr. Mubarak could perhaps be enough to appease the protesters, it's quite tricky. We'll have to see how events unfold over the coming days. I think that neither the protesters nor Washington will be satisfied if that happens. They'll want to see real change take place. They'll want to see both Mrs. Suleiman and the army deliver credible reforms.
Kim Katas in Washington, and I believe we are expecting a statement from the president. I'm not sure if you've had any, if that news has filtered through to you yet.
I'm afraid I missed that question, but just to update you on what else I'm getting here from American officials. I'm monitoring incoming email feeds as well, and American officials are telling me that there is, as I was saying, the risk that Mr. Suleiman and Mr. Mubarak were looking for a way to save the regime overall, possibly by having President Mubarak say that he was standing down, appease the protesters, and then have the army and Mr. Suleiman consolidate the regime. But possibly what they're also trying to do is make sure that the army did not have to choose whether to take on or not the demonstrators. The longer this went on, the longer there was a risk that the army was going to have to protect the president, who is the commander-in-chief, from the protesters if the protesters had decided to take on the demonstrators. And we understand that President Obama will be making a statement here in Washington in about 2 hours.
Kim Katas in Washington, thanks very much. And I'm sure we'll get back to you once we have that statement. In the meantime, here in the studio, our diplomatic correspondent, Jonathan Marcus. Jonathan, these are incredible pictures that we're seeing, as we were saying, flags waving, people jumping up and down. It's dark now in Egypt. It's definitely going to be a bit of a party, I imagine.
Oh, it's this is a historic day in the modern history of the country. I think what's fascinating, we've talked a little bit about the questions that remain, the many questions within Egypt itself. Clearly, many of those questions are going to be being asked outside as well. The Americans have inevitably been behind the curve all the way through, and that, in a sense, you can't blame them. They have a limited ability to influence events in Egypt. They're going to be welcoming, clearly, what they hope will be the outbreak of democracy. No doubt they'll raise some concerns about the interim military rule and so on. But in private, they will be hugely concerned. This, remember, is an upheaval in their key ally in the Arab world, a country, Egypt, that is at the very centre of American efforts to try and build a coalition to contain Iran, a key ally of Israel, and very much part and parcel of the US policy towards containing Hamas in the Gaza Strip and so on. So the Americans will have huge concerns, I think, about what the future trajectory of Egypt's policy is going to be.
And we are expecting a statement from President Obama soon. Obviously, we'll bring that to you when it happens. But as you were saying, behind the curve the whole time, remind us what the US administration has been saying.
Well, look, the Americans have had a problem from the outset. I mean, there's an ambivalence in American policy towards not just Egypt, but to many other countries who are the West's allies in the region. You know, on the one hand, these are strong allies. Many of them are authoritarian regimes. They get strong backing from the West and from the Americans in particular, often military support, hardware, training and so on. Deep down, the Americans also have wanted, I think quite genuinely, to push for democracy in the region. Mr. Bush did it in his own particular way. Mr. Obama made his speeches in Cairo and in Istanbul, eager also to have the spread of democracy. But always there's been this underlying pragmatism. If the need to back an authoritarian state trumped in almost every case the need to try and promote democracy.
Our diplomatic correspondent Jonathan Marcus here with me in the studio, as is our BBC Arabic service Inez Ishmael, and we're bringing you a special programme, a special world briefing as President Mubarak steps down.
BBC. It's the heartbeat of West African rhythms.
If you don't understand what the African beat is, then you're probably not born or bred here.
It runs through the veins of the Latin sound.
Almost 90% of a Cuban musician, they always have the clave inside.
And it's deep in the DNA of Western music.
Those places down in the south, they're really close to Cuba, so you can't stop the influence.
Discover how a five-note rhythm from Africa conquered the world.
It's become the backbone of practically the whole popular music of the world.
A short history of five notes. Online from the 25th of February at bbcworldservice.com.
If you want to know when any of our programmes are on, you can find the BBC schedule and frequencies for your city at bbcworldservice.com.
You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Claire Bowes, and after a summary of the latest world news, we'll be hearing more about the developments in Egypt, where the Vice President Omar Suleiman has announced that President Hosni Mubarak has decided to step down from office and his powers will be taken over by the Army Council. We'll hear from our correspondents in Cairo and more international reaction to the news. That's all here on the BBC World Service.
BBC News with Fiona MacDonald. Egypt's Vice President Omar Suleiman has announced on Egyptian television that President Hosni Mubarak has stepped down from office and his powers will be taken over by the Higher Council of the Armed Forces. The news is greeted with wild jubilation by the hundreds of thousands of protesters who have been on the streets in central Cairo for 18 days. They cheered loudly, waving their flags. Similar scenes of euphoria broke out in the city of Alexandria. The announcement followed news that President Mubarak had left Cairo for his residence in the Red Sea resort of Sharm el-Sheikh. The takeover by the army leadership breaches the constitution, and the BBC Cairo correspondent says that it's not clear whether what looks increasingly like a military takeover will be sufficient for the protesters, who have been demanding a new civilian government. The Chinese Foreign Minister Yang Jiechi, who's in Zimbabwe, has urged Western countries to lift sanctions against Harare. The European Union and the US imposed sanctions on President Mugabe and some of his closest allies after elections in 2002. Aid agencies in Sudan say they expect as many as 800,000 people to move this year from the north to the south of the country, following a referendum on independence for southern Sudan. The UN Refugee Agency said that this would put pressure on the already fragile situation in the south. Nokia, the world's biggest manufacturer of mobile phones, has announced a long-term partnership with the software giant Microsoft. The Finnish and US companies are trying to stop Apple's iPhone and Google's Android platform from establishing an unassailable dominance in the increasingly important global smartphone market. The British government says the Foreign Secretary, William Hague, is reviewing some of the recently announced cuts to the BBC World Service. A senior foreign policy official has said options were being discussed. BBC News.
You're listening to World Briefing from the BBC World Service with a special programme following the news that President Hosni Mubarak is to step down. Well, we can go now to Jerusalem for some reaction from our correspondent there, Kevin Connolly. Kevin, it's all happened in the last half an hour. What reaction has filtered through to you?
Well, there's been no reaction so far from the Israeli government, and I wouldn't hold your breath waiting for any either, because nowhere is this watched more carefully, of course, than Jerusalem. Nowhere is it watched more anxiously either. Israel has a huge amount invested in the peace treaty with Egypt, signed in the 1970s. They come to regard Hosni Mubarak as the kind of living embodiment of that peace treaty, as the guarantor of it. And there's huge anxiety about what will happen, not just immediately in Egypt from Israel's point of view. Who will take over? Is this a military coup? How long will the army run things? But also, what will happen in the longer term? Will a democratically elected Egyptian government of the future, for example, be under pressure from a sceptical population to take a harder line with Israel? So there are all sorts of questions here, and the Israeli government's basic view is that the best way to handle them for now is to say as little as possible in public.
In public, but behind the scenes, any sense of... do you have any sense of what will be going on behind the scenes?
Yeah, I think that they are hoping that this is what we're watching, is some kind of managed transition, that Hosni Mubarak has been abandoned now by rather similar people to himself who run the Egyptian armed forces, and that the hope will be that they will be interested not just in stability in the region, but in maintaining a good relationship with the United States. And, of course, the Egyptian army will only keep a good relationship with the United States if it keeps a good relationship with Israel. So there's cautious optimism here that if the people power revolution doesn't go too far, if the army can assert control, if stability can come back in the relatively near term, then some sort of workable arrangement from Israel's point of view may yet be possible.
And how is this being reported in Israel? Is this being covered minute by minute?
It's the subject of the same kind of intense scrutiny in Israel, the same sort of fascination in Israel that you would find anywhere else. But beneath it, of course, there is that extra dimension that Israelis are frankly very worried about this. Everybody knows that the peace deal with Egypt was the cornerstone of Israeli prosperity in many ways in the last 20, 30 years, because it allowed them to cut defence spending. It anchored Israel in the region. It made it feel secure within its borders. So people here watch it and they see that it's a great historical and human drama, just like the rest of the world does. But there is an edge to the way it's watched in Israel because there is so much at stake for Israelis.
Kevin Connolly in Jerusalem, many thanks for updating us with the news from Israel. Here with me in the studio is the BBC Arabic service Inez Eshmael. You heard their caution and anxiety in Jerusalem. How do you imagine things will be playing out?
You mean playing out in Egypt?
I
would imagine that any government in Egypt, any new foreign government, whether be it by the army or a civilian government, would have no interest to breach a peace treaty with Israel. In fact, any country in transition would try to secure its borders. That would be the first thing, so that it can focus on its internal stability. So I believe that this is not what's important to anybody in Egypt now. What's important to people in Egypt, whether people in the street or people in the army or people in any political party now, is how can we get this country back to normal? And by normal, I don't mean normal to how it was in the old regime. Normal as in a running country under a new government. And of course, the protesters themselves must be thinking about that now. I'm sure that many, many millions or hundreds of thousands would want to go home now and celebrate, but some of them would still be asking themselves, should we go home now? Should we actually ask for Omar Suleiman also to go? Should we ask for a clear assurance from the army about what will be next? Should we ask for trials for all figures of the old regime? So the questions are really many, but none of these questions now would be focused on their international policy or a peace treaty with Israel.
Right. BBC's Arabic service Inez Eshmael with me in the studio. But let's go back now to the heart of the protests in Egypt, to Tahrir Square, and our Arab affairs analyst Magdi Abdul Hadi, who's there.
Oh, hello, Claire. I'm not there yet, but I'm hoping to
You're
get there
there
as soon as traffic allows me to. But I can tell you, the moment the announcement was made on state television, we could hear the jubilation on the streets surrounding the building we were in, cars honking, women ululating. Cairo will not sleep tonight. The whole country, I should probably say, will not sleep tonight. This is by far one of the most historic moments in Egypt's modern history. It has never happened that Egyptians have persistently, tirelessly campaigned, broken old ways, old fears in the face of insurmountable difficulties, what many have regarded for years a police state, and broken that and managed to force a man they regarded as a dictator to step down. It's a huge step, will give enormous boosts to the confidence, the collective confidence of the people, and the fact that they can actually make things like this happen. It is just unprecedented, and of course everybody will be focused on the immediate and the immediate future, how to manage a transition to a more democratic form of government.
And for those who aren't familiar with Egypt, they will have heard for a different Egypt over the last 2 weeks. This prior to 2 weeks ago, Egypt was a different place.
I was in Egypt in December, and there was a general mood of apathy hanging over the country, even individuals. People got tired of discussing Mubarak and his family. It was the uppermost political topic in everyone's mind. When will Mubarak die? Will his son Gamal succeed him? And is it at all possible to stop that from happening? And the general consensus was very unlikely. The best that people can hope for is General Omar Suleiman, who's the current vice president himself, comes from military, will somehow become the future president. But nobody ever dreamt that Egypt will actually manage to get rid of Mubarak in the dramatic and spectacular way, epic almost, that it has managed to do so far.
And they didn't dream of it, but they kept on coming. 18 days, and they kept on coming. And over the last 24 hours has obviously been the most dramatic. Remind us of what's been happening in the last few hours.
Well, in the last few hours, people, after President Mubarak's speech on Thursday evening, in which said he disappointed many people by saying that he's not planning to quit and he handed over some of his powers to his vice president, people were enormously disappointed and angry. And somehow that increased the people's resolve and determination to come out on the streets in even large numbers. He had planned to do so anyway, but the fact that he somehow challenged them, and they thought the speech was very defiant and showed little respect, if any, for the will of the people. And people came out in large numbers in Cairo and Alexandria, as far away as the south of Egypt and Asyut, determined to stay there and keep putting pressure. And for the first time, tens of thousands, apparently, marched onto the presidential palace to demand that president step down, and step down immediately. A colleague who was there at the presidential palace, he said it was just an enormous cry of joy when the announcement was made at the palace. And he told me that it was actually the army who came out, or people from the Republican Guards, I would assume, would come out and made the announcement on a hala. And people just burst in joy and celebration. So this is history unfolding in the literal sense of the word. So people feel they've won, they've achieved something they've never, ever dreamt of achieving. And, of course, other countries will be watching closely. Mubarak was not the only Arab autocratic ruler. To the east, Libya, Colonel Gaddafi has ruled longer than Mubarak. Further to the east, there is, of course, Algeria, and to the north, east, Syria, another country with a very authoritarian regime. So the entire region, as well as the whole world, has been watching this, will continue to watch how what happened in Egypt and earlier in Tunisia will continue to reverberate across the Middle East.
Well, Magdi Abdul Hadi, our Arab Affairs analyst, will let you get down to the square now, and we can cross to John Simpson, who's on the streets of Cairo. John, what can you see?
Well, I'm in fact on the 17th floor of a large block of flats, and I'm looking down to a scene that, well, we certainly haven't seen in Cairo for nearly 3 weeks. The streets absolutely packed with vehicles, and people shouting and chanting and blasting their horns, waving flags, and walking up and down the roads, dancing. It's the most extraordinary sight, and what we haven't had is the traffic jams, and the traffic jams are back. So Cairo's back to its old self again tonight.
So much like our Arab Affairs analyst Magdi Abdul Hadi, everyone's heading to the square.
Well, not really, no. I mean, people are just kind of demonstrating with joy wherever they are. There will be a lot of people in the square. I can see large numbers of people heading towards it now on a bridge down a little bit further along the Nile from where I am. But I think it's just really an occasion to get out in the car, blast your horn, and it doesn't really matter where you go.
Have you managed to speak to anyone about their reaction?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's difficult not to. People come and want to grab you and tell you what a fantastic moment it is. How they always knew he was going. I'm not sure that's entirely true. And what a moment for Egypt this is. And, you know, I mean, tomorrow is another day, but now the pure joy of having got a highly unpopular leader off their backs is something which just comes as a delight to everybody here, I think, or at least almost everybody.
John Simpson in Cairo, thanks very much. Let's go now to our diplomatic correspondent, Jonathan Marcus, who's here with me in the studio. I'd just like to pick up on something our Arab Affairs analyst Magdi Abdul Hadi was saying about this being watched in the Arab region.
Well, absolutely, and we're beginning to get some reactions, at least from one Arab country, Tunisia. Remember, the country that, in a sense, began this wave of unrest. 4 weeks now, pretty well, after the Tunisians toppled their president. The AFP news agency is saying that Tunisians were dancing in the street when they heard about the resignation of the Egyptian president, Hosni Mubarak. Now, we're expecting other reactions. The American president is going to speak a little under 2 hours now, but we've already had a reaction from the European Union's foreign policy chief, Catherine Ashton, She said she respected the Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak's decision to stand down and called for a dialogue for the formation of a broad-based government in Egypt. She said that the European Union shared the objective of the Egyptian people for an orderly transition to democracy and free and fair elections in the country. And interestingly, a snippet on the news agencies from the Israelis, no named figure coming out yet and speaking, but a government official again speaking to the AFP news agency. It's obviously the Friday evening in Israel, so the Jewish Sabbath, but a government official telling AFP that they hope that the departure of the Egyptian president will now be conducted, the transition will be conducted smoothly.
Let's just hear a little bit about what's going on in Tahrir Square. And BBC Arabic service, Inez Ismail is here with me. You were saying to me, Egypt has become a big liberation square.
Absolutely. That people are not celebrating in Tahrir Square now. People are celebrating everywhere in Egypt. And Egypt now, after the 25th of January, has become a new Egypt. Another Egypt that was before the 25th of January. As we heard from Magdi Abdelhadi, there is this boost in the collective confidence of the people of Egypt that they can do something, that they went there for 18 days and they managed to change not just their present, they managed to change their future present and their future as a country and as the people of Egypt.
And let's remind ourselves that these protesters represent a myriad. They're from...
Absolutely. Some analysts say that there is a huge presence of this, of Muslim Brotherhood or a presence of this political party. In fact, those represent all of Egypt. The coalition of power that has been formed, 14 people represent this youth. They are from all directions. And this shows that it's not just one party or one political force that has a big or a central role in this uprising, if you can call it, or these demonstrations that managed to change the country. It's everybody. Everybody has participated. And the strongest part in this is the youth. The youth, their persistence and their innovation, the innovative ways that they managed to create in order to get all this crowd to the streets of Cairo, despite the fear, despite the apathy, despite everything, they managed to mobilize them and get them to choose their future.
I heard from a protester earlier today outside Egyptian state television. He was talking about his parents' generation and saying that they weren't convinced that the protesters were taking the right route. They watched Egyptian state television, they believe what Egyptian state television told them, but he was bringing them round and telling them this isn't true.
This is exactly my observation, that the older generation, the parents of those youth in the street, have always been dismissive of the ability of the youth, ability of the people to have a say in the future of this country. And it was their fear that has stopped this youth from saying their words for years. And now some of those youth are... I don't want to say that they don't forgive their parents, but they are critical of their parents who have not taken this step earlier to say that in a democracy, in a country, it's the people who should have their say, not the rulers, that the country is its people, not its rulers.
And you've been obviously following this story very much from the start. What for you was the most important point?
The most important point is a belief of someone that he can do something. That's one. Second, the social network sites. And the social network site is what got this message across to people and that has managed to get across the censorship of the media. It has managed to cross borders. This message and this belief did not only go inside Egypt. It went everywhere to Egyptians all around the world. And those Egyptians, not just the Egyptians in Egypt, managed to to create this. And once this belief has started to really become a reality, not just a vision, people started to act on it. When they saw the people in Tunisia and what they managed to achieve when they protested in the street, they thought, that's my analysis, they thought that, yes, they can make it, and they did it.
BBC Arabic Service, Ines Ishmael with me here in the studio. But let's cross now to John Lyne, who is very close to Tahrir Square, I understand. John, whereabouts are you?
Well, I'm right on the edge of the square. If I was in the square, I just wouldn't be able to hear you, and you probably wouldn't be able to hear me because it is so loud in there. I've just walked a short distance to go in here. The whole of Cairo, as you might expect, has utterly erupted. Everyone has suddenly found an Egyptian flag from somewhere. Every car horn is hooting. Everybody's put their car radio on to the maximum volume with some music. People are letting off fireworks. We're hearing gunfire in the air. People are hugging each other. The military are being congratulated. People are going up and getting their photos taken. The military are being given children to hug and to kiss. And everybody, well, if President Mubarak, if we had any doubts about the unpopularity of President Mubarak, they have now been scotched. It's like the country feels like it has been liberated.
And there's been a fairly easy relationship between the people, the protesters and the army throughout, but that has been key to this. How have the army been responding?
Well, the army have clearly done this. I mean, they've taken control, and I think in the cold light of dawn, once the celebrations are over, and that may be quite a way away yet, there will be a cold hard think about precisely how much they do love the army, because the Army High Council have taken control. It is a military coup, because the army have taken control and busted the constitution. Officially, the Speaker of Parliament should be in control. The military in charge, they've come out right in front. Now is a key moment. Are the military really committed to a transition to a proper democracy, or do they really want to entrench their power? But those are questions, I think, for tomorrow, next week and next month. For the moment, the crowd are absolutely just going crazy.
And I'm sorry, I was actually meaning the soldiers in the square. You say they've been handed babies. Obviously, they've had an important role to play over the past few...
Yeah, well, they played a slightly strange role here because they didn't come to the defence of the people in the square when they were attacked by these government thugs and shot at by government thugs. But they were there. They weren't certainly making the protesters go away. People had a degree of trust of the military here, but they were a bit wary of them. But the ordinary soldiers, yeah, people like them, and they get on well. They're seen as soldiers coming, an army coming from the people. Maybe people are a bit more sceptical about their commanders.
John Lyne in Tahrir Square, thanks very much. So, just a reminder, in the past half hour, 45, 50 minutes, the Egyptian Vice President Omar Suleiman announced that President Mubarak decided to step down from office and his powers would be taken over by the Army Council. This is how it went.
Mohammed Hosni Mubarak has decided to step down from the office of President of the Republic and has charged the Higher Council of the Armed Forces to administer the affairs of the country. May God help everybody.
Well, our correspondent Caroline Hawley has been looking back at Hosni Mubarak's presidency.
After 17 days of protests, it seemed like the moment had finally come. The Egyptian army hinted that President Mubarak was preparing to resign, and the mood on the street...
That was our correspondent, Maddie Savage. Let's now bring you Caroline Hawley, our correspondent who's been looking back at Hosni Mubarak's presidency.
It was amid turmoil that Hosni Mubarak became president when his predecessor Anwar Sadat was assassinated in 1981. A military man, stability was the obsession of his regime at the expense of human rights. For the West, his support for peace with Israel made him a pivotal ally. But he was violently opposed by Islamist extremists, and his rule was challenged by the Muslim Brotherhood and, more recently, by a growing secular opposition fed up of police brutality, corruption and autocratic rule. Inspired by the revolution in Tunisia, it was they who brought the people onto the streets. As unprecedented protests continued, President Mubarak made a series of concessions. All were too little too late. His regime had lost its legitimacy, and it was only a matter of time before he had to go.
Our correspondent Caroline Hawley there. Well, the week of protests and disruption have put immense pressure on the Egyptian economy. So what will today's announcement about President Mubarak's resignation mean? I'm joined now in the studio by our economics correspondent, Andrew Walker. Andrew, remind us how much of an impact this has had, 18 days of protests.
It has been a really quite substantial impact. A lot of people have not been going to work at various stages in this in these protests, so that means that many businesses have not been getting revenue. Either people haven't been turning up on the day or customers haven't been coming through the door. But at the same time, they've been having to pay rent, electricity and so forth. So it's been a serious problem for many businesses. In particular, of course, tourism has been very severely affected. Many holiday makers have been put off as a result of the turmoil, and so many went home early. Now, earlier on this week, there was a bit of a return somewhat towards normal. One analyst described it to me as the Egyptian economy getting back to flying on three engines out of a possible four. But we're still a long way back from full normality. But provided these latest developments do give us some degree of political stability for a period, and provided the demonstrators are happy enough about what's happened, then at least the business of getting Egypt back to work could take place fairly quickly.
And stock markets react quickly, usually. Have we seen anything yet?
Yes, it's been broadly received favourably on international markets. Some stock markets are a little higher. And we've also seen the price of oil come down, which is quite interesting. What's happening there is that oil was up because of fears about possible disruption to the Suez Canal, an important transit route for oil, both through the canal and through an adjacent pipeline. The fact that there is some sign of an improvement in the political situation, I think, has dispelled those fears to some extent. But I would emphasise how the markets see things may well change in the coming hours and days. Just depends on whether this degree of political calm is maintained for a longer period.
Our economics correspondent Andrew Walker there, thanks very much. Well, Jonathan Marcus, our diplomatic correspondent, is still here in the studio with me. Jonathan, what do you make of what we've heard in the past hour?
Well, it's an extraordinary upheaval for Egypt. It's potentially an extraordinary upheaval for the region as a whole. It throws so many questions forward about where Egypt itself is going to go, the process of transition, the role of the military, where else perhaps, where next, where might be influenced by these dramatic events. We're hearing a lot about the generational changes and differences in Egypt. One member of the older generation, I'm sure he won't mind me calling him that, the Nobel Peace Laureate, Mohamed El Baradei, who obviously returned to Cairo long before these disturbances in the hope of organising a new political force in the country. He's been speaking to one of the news agents. He's described today as the greatest day of my life. He said the country has been liberated after decades of repression, and he said that he expected a beautiful transition of power. I think if it's really beautiful and peaceful, many more people than just him will be mightily relieved.
Absolutely. And any more reaction? Have we had any more reaction yet? Are we expecting to hear from President Obama within an hour and a half or so?
Yes, indeed. A little more from Qatar in the Gulf. They've said that it's a positive, important step towards the Egyptian people's aspirations of achieving democracy. So from the Gulf, a green light on the what they see as the positive developments on the streets of Cairo.
Thanks very much, Jonathan Marcus. You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Claire Bowes. Just a reminder, this is a special world briefing bringing you news about the developments in Egypt, where the Vice President Omar Suleiman has announced that President Hosni Mubarak has decided to step down from office and his powers taken over by the Army Council.
BBC. What can I read? What can I write? What can I say?
When you don't have free expression, there'll be injustice. And injustice to me means violence.
The BBC travels around Southeast Asia to explore freedom of speech and democracy. What can I say? Online from Wednesday at bbcworldservice.com.
At bbcworldservice.com, you can get more information on your favourite programmes. To get background information and find out what's coming up, just log on to bbcworldservice.com.
This is the BBC in Naples,
Tel Aviv,
Perth,
Accra.
Wherever you are, you're with the BBC.
It's 17 hours GMT. I'm Paul Henley, and this is the BBC World Service, coming up in the next 60 minutes. The scenes of jubilation in Tahrir Square in Cairo, where fireworks, car horns and celebratory shots can be heard around the city. Well, he clung on longer than nearly anyone predicted, but Hosni Mubarak is no longer president of Egypt.
Mohammed Hosni Mubarak has decided to step down from the office of president of the republic.
The Egyptian army has just announced it's to suspend parliament. We hear from politicians in Cairo and from our correspondents among the crowds. And we hear reaction from around the world to what's happening after weeks of foreign governments stubbornly refusing to take sides. That's all coming up in a special programme on Egypt on the BBC World Service after a bulletin of world news.
BBC News with David Austin. Egypt's Vice President Omar Suleiman has announced on state television that President Hosni Mubarak has stepped down from office and his powers will be taken over by the High Council of the Armed Forces. The news was greeted with wild jubilation by hundreds of thousands of cheering protesters who've been on the streets in central Cairo for 18 days. Hugh Sykes was in Tahrir Square moments after the president's departure was announced.
I don't think I need to say anything, really. Just listen to the jubilation of this crowd a long way and away from where I am now on a balcony 200 or 300 metres away from the square. But just listen to this for a few seconds. It says it all. People in the square waving flags, waving banners, waving their arms in total happiness. This wall of sound has been coming up from the square for the last 2 or 3 minutes now, since the announcement was relayed to the people in the square that the man whose departure they had been demanding has finally gone, more than 2 weeks after this protest and this demonstration and this movement began.
One protester on the streets of Cairo, Jijé Ibrahim, was ecstatic. Our correspondent John Lyne says the announcement has taken everyone by surprise.
The Vice President, Omar Suleiman, simply came on television to say that President Mubarak had stepped down. The Army High Council was now in control. God help the nation, he concluded. Around Cairo, drivers are honking their horns in celebration. There's gunfire into the air. The huge crowds already out for their day of protest are rejoicing. However, the army takeover looks very much like a military coup. The constitution has been breached. Officially, the Speaker of Parliament should be taking over. Instead, it is the army leadership.
The Egyptian opposition figure, Mohammed al-Baradei, has described the resignation of President Mubarak after 3 decades in power as the greatest day of his life. Speaking in Cairo, he said that after years of repression, the country had finally been liberated. The European Union foreign policy chief, Catherine Ashton, said Mr. Mubarak had listened to the voices of the Egyptian people and opened the way for reform. She said it was important that dialogue for a broad-based government is accelerated and that European countries were ready to assist Egypt. And President Obama is to make a statement in a couple of hours. This is the world news coming to you from the BBC in London. President Mubarak was appointed vice president after a successful career in the military, and he became leader following the assassination of President Anwar Sadat in 1981. He continued his predecessor's policy of supporting the peace deal with Israel, which made him a key ally of the United States. Caroline Hawley has this assessment of Hosni Mubarak's career.
It was amid turmoil that Hosni Mubarak became president when his predecessor Anwar Sadat was assassinated in 1981. A military man, stability was the obsession of his regime at the expense of human rights. But he was violently opposed by Islamist extremists, and his rule was challenged by the Muslim Brotherhood and, more recently, by a growing secular opposition. Inspired by the revolution in Tunisia, it was they who brought the people onto the streets. President Mubarak made a series of concessions. All were too little, too late.
Now, in other news, the Chinese Foreign Minister Yang Jiechi is on a visit to Zimbabwe, has urged Western countries to lift sanctions. The European Union and the United States imposed targeted sanctions on President Mugabe and some of his closest allies after elections in 2002. The British government says the Foreign Secretary William Hague is reviewing some of the recently announced cuts to the BBC World Service. The World Service announced big cuts to its staff and services last month because of reduced government funding. They include the closure of five language sections and the loss of 650 jobs. Back now to our top story, the resignation in the last hour of the Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak. The news was greeted with jubilation by the crowds in Tahrir Square in the centre of the capital, Cairo, and their celebrations are continuing now. And that's the latest BBC News.
You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Paul Henley. You will be getting used now to the sound of the crowds in Tahrir Square in Cairo. Well, he has gone. President Mubarak of Egypt has done a U-turn on his speech of last night, and he has resigned. The announcement was delivered by Egypt's Vice President Omar Suleiman and relayed to the huge crowds in the square in Cairo.
Hosni Mubarak has decided to step down from the office of President of the Republic and has charged the High Council of the Armed Forces to administer the affairs of the country. My God help everybody.
And this is how the crowds reacted. Just one of the protesters in the square here, Gigi Ibrahim. We'll be hearing much more from the centre of Cairo soon. Right up until the end, Egypt's powerful military backed the president's plan to stay in office until elections in September. But the massive crowds, outraged by his refusal earlier to step down, continued to pack squares in Egypt's two biggest cities, Cairo and Alexandria. They marched on President Mubarak's presidential palaces. They blockaded state television. The Armed Forces Supreme Council, a body of generals, depicted itself as the champion of reform, promising to make sure change promised by the president was carried out, and to lift hated emergency laws as soon as the protests ended. But the protesters kept up the pressure, even though the army is more widely trusted than politicians in Egypt. And they got their way. Soon, live again to Cairo. You're hearing the sound of the crowds now live as we speak. In the studio here in Bush House, I'm joined by Ines Ismail from the BBC's Arabic service and by Dr. Claire Spencer, who's head of the Middle East and North Africa programme at Chatham House, which is an international think tank in London. Do you think, Ines, first of all, He wanted to hold out longer, or had his appetite for power just disappeared?
The only thing that's for sure is that he did not do it voluntarily, that he was forced to do this. And we can read this from his statement yesterday, in which everybody expected Mubarak, 24 hours from yesterday, this time yesterday, we expected that he will resign, but he did not. Today, I think it is the voice of the army that decided.
It was the army's ultimatum.
And that's why the power has gone to the High Council of the Armed Forces of Egypt. That the army has said, this is enough. Egypt is getting into a very dangerous and very critical situation. We cannot keep this for long.
And Claire Spencer, to all intents and purposes, the army is now in charge in Egypt.
Yes, pretty much so. And let us not forget that most of the senior civilians in government have themselves had a career in the military in the past. And I think the position of Omar Suleiman is going to be particularly interesting, given his role of intelligence services. I mean, it's been widely rumoured that they've had intelligence operatives amongst the protesters. So he, if anything, has been able to test the mood of the crowd and actually have a feel of what the street is doing. Now, this is, if you like, has been good if indeed it's contributed to the departure of Mubarak, but it might also be used against them in future.
Our correspondent, Wira Davis, is near Tahrir Square and he joins me now. Wira, some of the reporting has taking on the tone of football commentary in the past hour, this sense of heightened excitement as if a big goal's been scored.
Well, it's a pretty big goal, if you want to use that analogy, because this is a man who has been in charge. Some would call him a dictator. He's certainly an authoritarian ruler. He has been in charge of the Arab world's biggest and most important country for 30 years, and he has been forced out of power by people power. For the last 3 weeks, Mr. Mubarak has steadfastly refused to go with the backing of a huge state apparatus and, of course, his own image, his own reputation. He thought he could ride this one out, but again and again, the people have come back. To use that football crowd analogy again now, they're chanting in the streets, they're waving the flags. It's as though Egypt had won the World Cup. That's enough of the football analogies, but this is a huge day for Egypt. Who knows what comes next? That perhaps doesn't matter right now. But people, working class, middle class, religious, secular, from across the country, have achieved something which many people thought was impossible.
The reaction is coming in swiftly from around the world now. The Iranian government has hailed the victory of protesters. There's reaction from the German Chancellor Angela Merkel welcoming Mr. Mubarak's exit as a historic change. We'll bring you much more as it comes, but there must be a real sense of the eyes on the world being on people there.
Yeah, I mean, this is, an historic day. There's mass euphoria in the streets. Trying to stand back a bit from the euphoria. You know, nobody knows what will come next in Egypt. This is a country with 84 million people, 20, 30 million of them live in absolute poverty. So there are many problems ahead for Egypt. If democracy does come to this country, it won't bring quick fixes. But again, perhaps those questions, those issues are for tomorrow. It's the second big Arab revolution in the space of less than a month after, of course, what happened in Tunisia. Many people are asking now which country, which authoritarian regime in this country is now nervously looking over its shoulders. These are really very heady historic days in this part of the world.
We're at Davis for the moment. Thank you. Let's talk to one of the protesters in Tahrir Square now, Lina Al-Wadawi. Can you hear me, Lina?
Yes, I can hear you, but can you hear the crazy chanting, cheering and happiness around me?
We can hear it, absolutely. Tell me what the expression on people's faces is around you in the crowd now.
Well, millions of people. I don't think anyone is at home. All of the streets of downtown and around Tahrir Square, and of course Tahrir Square, is absolutely packed. And you can hear people chanting, freedom, freedom. Egypt is finally enjoying freedom. And other slogans being chanted are, you know, people have managed to finally bring that regime down. And finally, and Egypt is free. Mubarak is out. Egypt is free. Mubarak is out.
Being tweeted on the BBC's live page, apparently Wikipedia's entry on Egypt already has Mubarak listed as former president. It must be a good feeling for you as one of the demonstrators, Lina.
It's a great feeling. People here are in a state of, you know, disbelief. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, people are going out of their minds from the happiness. Everyone is cheering, everyone is hugging and, you know, and congratulating everyone else, and people are chanting, we're free, we're free, we're happy, we can now do whatever we want, and we will clean our country from the corruption, we'll have finally freedom and democracy, and people are singing and dancing in the streets of Cairo. It's amazing.
Just tell me the moment when you heard the news. How did you hear it?
Well, I just saw I was at the presidential palace. I was demonstrating in front of the presidential palace. And I suddenly saw people running to some of the TVs in the cafes and just cheering. So I couldn't believe it. We all ran to the nearest TV, and when we saw it with our own eyes, when we saw his vice president saying that he had left, we all cheered in disbelief, and we all just ran into the streets, and we kept, you know, dancing in the streets, and you know, you could hear guns shooting and people saying Mabruk, Mabruk, just congratulations, congratulations.
Lina Al-Wadawi in Tahrir Square, thank you. We'll be going back there again and hearing the sense of excitement. Everyone celebrating what they're calling freedom. Of course, the position of the government of Egypt is still very much in flux and unclear at the moment. Some would say it was an odd sort of freedom with a country that technically had an army council in charge of it. Just before we came on air, I talked to a minister from the recently reformed government in Cairo. I asked Dr. Samir Radwan if, amid the confusion of change this afternoon, he was still the finance minister now.
I am the finance minister. I have not been told anything to the contrary, and that's not really one of my preoccupations. My main preoccupation is now the dust is settled, and luckily, the crisis is over before a grave damage happening to the Egyptian economy. We are quite capable of saving the economy and moving forward. We have learned quite a lot from those young men and women in Tahrir Square over the last couple of weeks. This government has tried to respond to their needs, but now we have to move from emergency measures to strategic work.
It doesn't really look like the dust has settled yet, far from it.
What would it take for the dust to settle? I think if all the demands have been met, the dialogue with the opposition is underway, and we hope we can get on with the work.
It's being hailed as a huge victory for the crowds, but I think everyone will realise, even those feeling the joy of change in the crowd today, that there's a lot of uncertainty ahead for Egypt.
Our job is to reduce the uncertainty element and stabilise the economy, because it has been the main cause of the malaise among the young people.
Do you think the Egyptian people will tolerate members of the old government now?
Which government? The government before this one?
Or? By old, I mean a week old. I mean your government.
Well, it's up to them. It's up to them. I'll do the job whether I'm a minister or I'm not a minister. I've been doing the same thing for the last 30 years, wherever I am. It doesn't matter.
What do you think when you look at the crowds cheering and singing in Tahrir Square right now?
I think we have neglected those people. I have said this. I don't say this today. I have said it to your own channel. But we have neglected those people, and now they feel they belong. We talk about participation and so on, and we used to talk about it as a token. Now it is real.
Are you going to lift the state of emergency?
It's not up to me, of course, only the Minister of Finance. The Supreme Military Council said they would lift the state of emergency as soon as calm returns to the country.
What does that mean? When?
It means we are very close.
What do you expect to happen now?
5 minutes after this statement.
I mean, in the near future.
I'm sure Egypt will reorganize its cards, start facing to the future, and start surging ahead. Because just before this crisis, you know, we were talking about an emerging economy to join the pack of countries like China, India, Brazil, and South Africa. So we are back on the track.
Who's the president of Egypt as we speak?
The Supreme Military Council. We wait for them to say what kind of government they would like to put in place. And as you could see, they are highly trusted by the whole population, and certainly by the people in Tahrir Square.
Led by Suleiman?
I don't know.
You say you felt you'd neglected the people in Tahrir Square now. Why
not
did you not...
Me personally, not... No. Not.
You said you felt that the country had neglected those people.
The country had neglected the youth, not only Tahrir Square.
Do you regret that the country obviously didn't feel it had neglected them 3 weeks ago?
Listen, I don't defend this government, but I don't think this government. I can speak for myself. I was among them all the time. I have taken 15 measures, the purpose of which was to respond to their demands. So I don't feel guilty at all.
Do you expect Hosni Mubarak to live out the rest of his life in Egypt now?
He said he will never leave Egypt.
You believe him?
He will die in Egypt. It is his right.
That was Samir Radwan, who is finance minister in the existing Egyptian government, although reports are coming in that the government has or will be fired by the army. You're listening to the BBC World Service, bringing you up to date with events in Egypt at the moment. The sound you can hear is the sound of jubilant crowds in Tahrir Square. The Swiss government has frozen potential Mubarak assets in Switzerland. That's according to a foreign ministry spokesman there. We might comment on that soon. I'm joined in the studio here at Bush House by Inas Ismail from the BBC's Arabic service and Dr. Claire Spencer from the Middle East and North Africa programme at Chatham House in London. All the demands of the protesters, Dr. Spencer, have been met, the finance minister said. What do you think?
No, I think the test of whether their demands have been met will take considerably longer. I mean, they want free and fair elections. They want the system to change, which means more than getting rid of the president. And this is the real challenge, is how people who have vested interests in the status quo, and the army, I have to say, senior command are implicated in this, are actually going to engineer something that really will satisfy the demands of the crowds. But I think their first attention has to be on the economy. Much as we would love to see political progress done quickly, it's the economy which has suffered considerably over the last 2 weeks, and the numbers of people who are just not getting any income that they will have to address in the short term.
Ines.
Of course, in a country with maybe 40% of its population living under $2 a day, this is definitely an issue. However, this also is a transitional phase, and everybody's hoping that once this transitional phase is over, the economy can restart, and that people, the pro-democracy forces, can gather their forces to reach not just economical reform, but also political reform. And the first steps of that is to get rid of the regime.
It was a favourite phrase over the past 18 days, wasn't it? That Egypt is a country in flux. Well, if it was in flux then, what is it in now?
It's in panic, in chaos, in... You cannot describe what's going on there now. I'm sure that the protesters themselves are in panic, because over the last few days they have been putting plans and strategies on how to get to gather more people, how to get them to join them in the street to demand that Mubarak steps down. But now that as Mubarak stepped down, what is next? What are they asking for? How can they gather their forces in order to achieve these demands now that they are not negotiating with Mubarak or Omar Suleiman? They are negotiating with the army. And Omar Suleiman is not necessarily a force in this. All of this could take Omar Suleiman into account, but also could just neglect Omar Suleiman, and the focus would be now just within the army, the power of the army.
The BBC's Paul Danaher is in Cairo now and joins us. Paul, panic among some of the crowd amid the celebration? People really don't know what's coming next.
They don't know what's coming next, but there's no panic. At the moment, there's just massive celebration. I've been watching fireworks going off. There are thousands and thousands of flags being waved, children being carried on people's shoulders. It feels like a New Year's Eve party, and in many ways, it is the eve of a new year and a new beginning for Egypt, but no one really knows what that's going to look like.
Tunisians are apparently dancing in the street at the moment, blaring their horns to celebrate what's happening in Egypt, because just weeks after their own ruler, Ben Ali, was ousted, they're feeling a sense of Arab brotherhood. Do you think protesters there are feeling that?
I don't think this is going to end in either Egypt or in Tunisia. There must be many, many leaders around the Arab world now looking very, very concerned at themselves and their regimes, and there must be many, many people in the Arab world who are thinking, if the Egyptians can do this, then so can we, because Egypt is the most important country in the Arab world. It's always been the one that everybody thought would be the last to change, because they really have had it sewn up for decades, and now this has happened. And if it can happen here, it really can happen anywhere else in the Arab world, and that's what everybody else in the Arab world will be thinking tonight.
Paul Danaher, thank you. Let's talk to Salma in the crowd, one of the demonstrators. She slept in Tahrir Square the last 5 nights. At one point she was kidnapped, as I think she put it, by the police. Can you hear me, Salma?
Yes, I can. I slept for the past 12 nights. This is a correction.
Okay. Would you tolerate Hosni Mubarak staying in Egypt now? Is it enough that he's out of the presidential palace? Should he leave the country?
No, everyone is asking for him to be put to be brought to court because he is responsible for the crimes committed for the past 30 years and especially the crimes committed against protesters the last 2 weeks.
How do you feel now? It's a crass question, but tell me.
I feel very happy and relieved. But we still know that this is half the victory. We still have to think about what the army gonna do. Everyone wants this country to be civilian, but I think the power of the street is gonna force the army to obey. I mean, the army is here for a peaceful transition of power. This is supposedly why they are in power now, and I don't think the streets are gonna allow anything else.
Okay, Salma, thank you very much for coming on the programme. You're listening to the BBC World Service. We're reporting on what's happening in Cairo now. Hosni Mubarak has been the president of his country for almost 3 decades. He came to office in October 1981 after the assassination of President Anwar Sadat. Caroline Hawley looks back now on Hosni Mubarak's rise and fall.
Hosni Mubarak was thrust by violence into the leadership of the Arab world's most populous country.
After stun grenades had been tossed at the platform, soldiers from the top of the truck opened fire.
It was October 1981 and Hosni Mubarak was beside President Anwar Sadat as he was assassinated. Stability became the watchword of his presidency. Emergency law, which prevented gatherings of more than 5 people, lasted throughout the 30 years of his rule. Born in a small village in the Nile Delta, Hosni Mubarak became a pilot and rose to be Air Force commander. He helped rebuild Egypt's air force after it was destroyed by Israel in the 1967 war, a massive humiliation for a proud nation. He was later to maintain the peace treaty signed between Egypt and Israel in 1978, although it was unpopular at home. His policy on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in particular earned him the ire of Islamist extremists.
A 5-year-old girl, her mother and grandmother were among the 6 British people killed in yesterday's massacre at Luxor.
The massacre of 58 people was the deadliest of a string of Islamist attacks that threatened the country's lucrative tourist industry. A crackdown followed the massacre, but it was not only the violent extremist who suffered from the repression of the regime. Members of the largest opposition group, the Muslim Brotherhood, were frequently put in jail, where torture was common. The intelligence services were pervasive and Egyptians felt stripped of dignity. Criticism from human rights groups was routine, but to the West, Egypt was a key ally, a voice of moderation on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
The United States and Egypt have worked together closely for many years. And for many of those years, President Mubarak has been a leader and a counselor and a friend to the United States.
That friendship earned Egypt $2 billion a year from the US, mostly in military aid. But many of its people were living in poverty. The country was mired in unemployment and corruption. It was no longer mainly the Muslim Brotherhood opposing Hosni Mubarak's long rule. A new internet-savvy generation was demanding change. The frustration on the streets was palpable. Inspired by the revolution in Tunisia in January, Egypt erupted in protest, Egyptians en masse defying the police state. The people of the Arab world's most populous country had shaken off their fear. The regime's first response was a security clampdown, curfews coupled with an internet and mobile phone blackout.
Caroline Hawley was reporting on the rise and fall of Hosni Mubarak. You're listening to the sounds of crowds celebrating in the centre of Cairo tonight. The President, Hosni Mubarak, having resigned within the past hour. You're tuned to the BBC World Service.